This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
A warning, this episode contains explicit language and discussions of sex acts. There are plenty of sex scenes in movies, funny ones and dramatic ones, adventurous ones, and ones that just fade to black with soft music playing.
It's rarely difficult to notice when a sex scene is bad, but what makes a sex scene good? I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about sex in the movies on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. You don't just live in your home, you live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, local amenities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework. This message comes from NPR sponsor BritBox, streaming acclaimed original series you won't find anywhere else, with powerful performances from Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, Bella Ramsey, Matthew McFadden, and more. Streaming at BritBox.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the American Cancer Society. By the end of this message, two people will be told they have cancer. Yes, every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. But by the end of this message, you could do something about it with your donation. A gift of any amount to the American Cancer Society can help those facing cancer get free rides to care or a free place to stay closer to treatment. Donate today at cancer.org.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Squarespace. Measure your end-to-end online performance with powerful website and seller analytics. Get insights on top traffic sources, understand how your reach is growing, and more. Use code NPR to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Joining me and Aisha today is Christina Tucker. She's the co-host of the podcast, Wait, Is This a Date? Hello, Christina. Welcome back.
Hello. What an honor to be here on this auspicious day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also with us is Ronald Young Jr. He is the host of the film and television review podcast, Leaving the Theater, and the podcast, Wait For It. Hi, Ronald.
For this episode and this episode only, I'd like to be referred to as Dr. Love.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, you got the voice for it, man. Lean into that mic.
Absolutely.
All right. So the reason we're gathered here today is to talk about sex scenes. We wanted to give a little bit of structure to this conversation. So we've each brought a scene we want to talk about that we think is good, or a movie that has good sex, and we'll talk about what makes it work. Christina, you are up first.
So my pick is from the 1996 movie Bound, directed and written by the Wachowskis.
Yes.
It is about Violet, played by Jennifer Tilly, who is trying to escape this relationship with her mafia boyfriend. And she enters into this affair with this ex-con named Corky, who's played by Gina Gershon. And they hatch a scheme to steal this money and, in the process, mm-hmm. of course, fall in love.
You seem uncomfortable. Do I make you nervous, Corky?
No.
Thirsty, maybe.
Curious, maybe.
That's funny. I'm feeling a little bit curious myself.
This sex scene, I think, is one of my favorites, probably because it's one that I saw pretty early in my life. I think it was at a time where I was like, ooh, two women having sex. I'll bookmark that for later in my personal journey. But I think also something I've found as I've gotten older and seen more, many more sex scenes in films, is that often, I think, especially for like lesbian films or any kind of women that love interests, sex scenes, they often get that like male gaze charge leveled at them, when a lot of the times I find that if not actually the male gaze, what folks are usually meaning is like, this is hot in a way that I expect things to be hot. I don't want to see that in like this kind of context. But I think this sex scene works so well because it does feel real in a way that I think a lot of sex scenes sometimes struggle with. This one feels like two people who are into each other. It feels realistically, like, I'll say it, kind of sweaty and a little sticky and kind of like disgusting in a way that I'm like, yeah. That is part of what sex is.
Tactile.
Yeah, it's a very tactile sex scene. I recently revisited this movie and it was such a thrill to revisit this scene in particular. The feeling I had watching it was like, oh, right, like we can do this like kind of sex scene in films and have this both titillating but also emotional connection. And I think sometimes we find, or at least I find, that there's like an overshot one way or the other. Like we are just going for titillation or we're just going for the emotional stuff. And I feel like this is a really perfect marriage of those two scenes. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it was, you know, choreographed by Susie Bright, who's a feminist writer and sex educator. Yeah. She's talked a lot about choreographing this sex scene and how important it was to kind of get this right. And it just really feels like something that was done with a lot of care and love. And I'll say it, sexiness. And that is what I love to see in a film.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's like an intimacy coordinator before I heard that term used a lot. There's a terrific episode about this movie in Karina Longworth's Erotic 90s series in her podcast, You Must Remember This. I just encourage you to listen to the episode if you're interested in this excellent pick, which I have nothing to add. I think you're absolutely right about it.
I almost chose this.
Yes, Aisha.
I think that what I love about it, and I recently, not too long ago, watched this for the first time, and it really stuck out to me just, first of all, how much chemistry they have together, these two perform. Like back in the 90s, you're obligated to have a sex scene of some sort or foreplay or whatever. And I love the fact that like there's a flirtation.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Isn't it obvious? I'm trying to seduce you.
The Jennifer Tilly character is kind of the one who's sort of leading this moment, and the Gina Gershon character, who previously up until this point has been very like forceful and kind of the one who's kind of the dominant one. The roles are kind of switched as they're going into this. And it's just really kind of, it shows like how people can be different in one environment and then, you know, a different kind of person in another one. So great choice.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I've never seen the scene that y'all are talking about, but knowing that it's done by the Wachowskis, everything you're describing sounds familiar of their later work. Like I'm thinking about what I've seen in The Matrix and specifically what I've seen in Sense8, where there's a couple of scenes in Sense8 that like kind of like made me tug at my shirt a little bit. Hearing what you're describing sounds like they get the idea of like centering pleasure.
Yes.
They get that right more often than not. So I'm definitely interested to see it for myself.
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing about the fact that this is sex with two women is that I almost feel like movies, the portrayal of sex in movies is so single focused on like a heterosexual act of penetrative sex. That's kind of what 95% of sex in movies is, if they show you very much of it at all. So anytime you're not seeing that, you do get that focus on other activities and as Ronald said, on pleasure itself. So that is Bound from 1996, directed and written by the Wachowskis. All right, Ronald, let's talk about your pick.
So my pick is a little indie art house film from summer 2023. You might remember it. It's called Oppenheimer. I picked this movie because it's just been sitting in my head ever since I watched it. And mostly because while I don't necessarily think these are the best sex scenes I've seen, I admire the way that Christopher Nolan used them in the movie, the way that he kind of constructed them. You know, the first one, there's two sex scenes in the movie. One is from Florence Pugh playing Jean Tatlock, having sex with J. Robert Oppenheimer, played by Cillian Murphy. And in the first one, there's this scene where it's just kind of like a standard sex scene, but then she picks a book out of his library, hands it to them, and he starts reading it.
Read the words.
And now I am become death. Destroyer of worlds.
And she then mounts him in a way that I've never seen happen in a film before, like me personally, in my entire sex scene watching career.
Same.
But the second sex scene, it hits you by surprise. At this point, J. Robert Oppenheimer is being interrogated at this point for his influence in using the bomb and maybe being a communist. As he's being interrogated. His wife is in the room with him, Kitty Oppenheimer, played by Emily Blunt. She's sitting there, and as they're beginning to interrogate him about his relationship with Jean Tatlock, she begins to imagine them having sex. Mm-hmm. The way that they present it in the way that she imagines it happening. And I realize at the moment, it's a very hot scene. What happens? Mm-hmm. The reason why it's hot is because it's what she's imagining. And what we imagine is always hotter and way more descriptive than what actually happened in front of us. And I thought that that was just like a very good use of a sex scene in the movie. Like sometimes you see sex scenes in movies and they're completely useless. It's just like director's having fun. People are doing it. What can I get away with? That type of thing. Whereas this had a very specific use, and it tells us more about Emily Blunt's Kitty Oppenheimer. And I just thought it was really well done.
Not going to lie, when I saw that you had chosen this, I was like, really? but the way you actually describe it now, and for some reason, when I saw this movie, I don't think it came across to me that this was her imagination.
I don't think it did to me either, but it makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. So like, I agree with you. Like if that's what he was going for, and again, Christopher Nolan is, I think these were his first times or one of his first times doing actual sex scenes in one of his movies.
First time.
Yeah.
Using it in that way is an interesting way because it's not just about the sex. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it has a meaning, it has a place, and our imagination is often way worse than anything that could actually play off in real life.
Yeah. And I think if you think about the use of positioning in that second scene, and then the fact that she locks eyes with the camera from Kitty Oppenheimer's perspective, because in the next scene is it showing Kitty Oppenheimer's face. I remember at that moment just being like, man, this is a very hot scene in my opinion, but also like that usage, just well done.
I had the same feeling. I was like, this is hot, but also like, what's going on here, Chris? And then when it clicks, it is very satisfying.
Well, I was going to say, I'll reference one more thing. I was going to bring another scene, and it was from The Best Man. And in The Best Man, the whole idea behind it is that the actual groom, played by Morris Chestnut, kind of has these very misogynistic and old, just old-fashioned thinking about sex, you know? So when he finds out that his fiance, soon-to-be wife, has slept with his best man, he starts imagining it. And if you remember, he's standing at the altar. If you've seen the movie, he's standing at the altar and he's imagining not just normal, run-of-the-mill, normal sex, but this just very hot thing happening. And I feel like anytime that is depicted, typically it feels like for me, it's like a trigger to say, this is what they're imagining it to be. That's not what actually happening. What happened was they read a book and they had a good time, but it probably wasn't what you imagined it to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and it's an interesting question to think, like, because Christopher Nolan is not, I don't think of him as somebody who would put a sex scene in a movie to turn you on necessarily, right, particularly not in a story about Oppenheimer. Yeah. So it's going to be doing work. Mm-hmm. All right. So that is Oppenheimer, written and directed by Christopher Nolan. Aisha, you picked one that's very near and dear to my heart also.
Yeah, I was fist pumping for this one. So,
yes, I am also going to take it all the way back to 2023 with a movie that I actually didn't like overall, but like the best part of that entire movie came within the first 10, 15 minutes. And that is Magic Mike's Last Dance. Look, we have an entire episode on this, so I'm not going to belabor all the other parts of this movie. But what I loved about the second Magic Mike, Magic Mike XXL, it knew to play to the women in a way that the first one arguably doesn't, or at least the way we stereotypically think of women wanting to see things. Mm-hmm. And what Magic Mike's Last Dance does is that it sort of takes that and goes straight for the jugular, goes straight for your panties, for your underwear, because in the first 10, 15 minutes. So Mike, played by Channing Tatum, is bartending a fundraising event at the home of this uber rich lady named Max, who's played by Salma Hayek Pino. And she learns that he used to be a dancer. And so after the party is over, she offers him $6,000 to dance for her, just like one last dance, even though he's like, I'm retired. I'm not doing that anymore. I was trying to make furniture and my business went up in flames and now I'm a bartender. And she offers him this in her like palatial, beautiful living room, dining room area that has like floor to ceiling windows. And what ensues is this like 4 or 5-ish minute long, amazing lap dance that eventually turns into sex. We know it's going to turn into sex. At first, they're like, well, you know, no happy ending. And it's like, of course, there's going to be a happy ending. It's Magic Mike. Mm-hmm. What makes this great? First of all, this is like 4 to 5 minutes of just like amazing foreplay. And honestly, when we're talking about sex scenes, I think usually we're actually often talking about foreplay and the things that lead up to it as opposed to the actual sex scene. And so you have Mike pouring her a drink because she looks stressful. And he's like, "You look like you need a drink." So he gives her a drink. She sits down. He casually starts surveying the room in the way that Channing Tatum only can. And he's like getting a lay of the land. He moves a vase of flowers off the dining room table. He comments on how well made the furniture is because, again, he's a furniture man. This feels like a porno, but like elevated. He's like touching it and checking it to make sure it's sturdy because he's like, "We're going to be using this in a few minutes." And then he asks consent.
"So I don't know if you really know what you bought, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. And at any point, I take you past your comfort zone,
I fucking slap you.
You just like it."
And then it starts. You've got "Careful" by Lucky Day playing, and the lyrics are emulating what we're seeing. It's like, "Careful what you wish for." And it's like, yeah, she wished for this, and now she doesn't know what she's about to get into. And it's just pure hotness. And I love dance. I'm a dancer. I just love the choreography, how it is simulated sex, but in the most like amazing and like athletic way. There's a point where he's lifting her, planting her against the windows. Then they're like on this decorative wood display and he's just hanging from it. And then his like the camera kind of tilts down and you can see it. And then his pants just fall to reveal his boxers. It's just amazing. Are you all picturing this? Can we all see this?
I unfortunately am. It's quite distracting.
I know. And Max, she's just along for the ride. She's kind of a prop, but then he's using her in like, her body is the instrument. And it's just really amazing. Mm-hmm. Hat tip to Alison Falk and Luke Brodlick, who were the choreographers. They made this just look like amazing. And it is the highlight. The movie can only go down from there. Really, just if you haven't seen it, just watch that scene and you're good. You don't need to watch the rest of the movie.
The part of that scene at the beginning when as you were mentioning, he's like shaking the
structural integrity test.
It's such a great reference to the fact that like people who know this series have already seen the first movies.
Yeah.
They know what he does. And so when you're seeing him like shaking that pole, you get that feeling of like, I know what's coming up. Yeah. I'm so excited. It really like builds to that. And I think, as you said, Aisha, the movie sort of is forgettable other than this, but I'm so glad you brought this because I love this scene too.
Yeah, this scene is incredible.
Yeah.
I have such a clear memory of being in that screening and just being like, yeah, this is what art is. Like, we know, we found the answer. It's checking furniture for structural integrity and then climbing upon it. Great work, everyone.
All right. So that is Magic Mike's Last Dance, directed by Steven Soderbergh. I chose a movie that I love dearly, dearly, which is Love and Basketball, which came out in 2000. It was written and directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood. This was her feature debut as a director. And it's about a couple. The woman is named Monica, and the guy is named Quincy, and they're played by Sanaa Lathan and Omar Epps. And they meet when they are little kids, and they're sort of like frenemies when they're little, but then they kind of get crushes on each other. You see them when they're little kids, when they're in high school, when they're in college, and then when they're playing professionally, because they're both incredibly serious basketball players. The sex scene in the movie comes when they are in high school. They're at the end of high school, basically, and they're about to go to college. And what I love about this scene, when you have scenes with younger people who are less experienced with sex, they tend to be either bad and comical or ridiculously idealized for anybody's early sexual experiences. Yeah. I think the suggestion in the film is that he has some experience with sex and she doesn't. It's not awkward and terrible, but it's also not an instant symphony of choreography and things like that. The scene has a respect for this wonderful mix of shyness that they kind of both feel and excitement that they both feel. And there are things about this scene, like the fact that when they are taking their clothes off, they stare at each other like you would. And people in movies usually don't. And I think that the thing about Gina Prince-Bythewood that's so interesting is that I just think she's a great, you know, you talked earlier about the word tactile. I just think she's a great filmmaker when it comes to portrayals of bodies. She also did a film called Beyond the Lights, which also has really intense sex scenes that I think are really good. Mm-hmm. A lot of directors, I think, they don't give you the sense that you're really looking at humans sometimes. Sometimes you get the sense that you're entirely seeing something so idealized. She just has a wonderful hand with physicality. Mm-hmm. Her wisdom in how to present sex comes from this more general skill.
I also think, if I'm not mistaken, that scene is scored by Maxwell, This Woman's Work.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Stand outside this woman's work, this woman's work.
Oh, it's hard on the man. That song is like inextricable for me. Yeah. From that scene. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the music video for that song, yeah. as far as I'm concerned. That movie came out in 2000, so I would have been in high school at the time. And I remember a lot of us like that being like the premier romantic mm-hmm. film yeah. for us at the time. Guys like using it as instruction, women seeing it as like how they want men to treat them or how the type of relationship they want to have with the dude. So it was, I think that scene in particular, especially watching it as an adult, how that would probably play out. It felt closer to reality mm-hmm. than a lot of the other scenes. Since I absolutely agree with you, Linda.
Yeah, I think there's something so awkward and sweet about that scene that has always kind of stuck with me in a way that I don't know that I have ever felt like, I understand that feeling. But I do really, I love seeing that kind of portrayal of that specific kind of long-term relationship finally culminating in this. And it is just, that's a good pick. Good pull.
Love it.
Yeah, and I should add, I think in a movie where they're both athletes, it makes sense that also kind of plays into that. There's this, I always go back to this scene where they are sitting on her bed in her dorm or his bed in his dorm. I forget which it is. And they're icing each other's injuries from mm-hmm. playing basketball. Yes. And it is so sweet and it is so kind and it is so intimate and beautifully done. And if you are among the people who has never seen this movie, please go watch this movie. It is truly one of my absolute favorites. And the wise use of sex and how it like builds trust between these people when they're very young and how it is part of the development of their relationship is just, I love it so much.
You know what else? That scene that you're talking about where they're icing each other, that's a scene in which they start playing basketball one-on-one in the dorm room.
So how about a little one-on-one?
What are we playing for?
Clothes.
What?
I score, you strip. You score, I drop something.
They also then have sex after that, and it's completely mm-hmm.
yes.
different.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It's talking about familiarity. So the way that like they're building along the movie also works. So,
and that's one of those things we talk about where it contributes to the characterization because you see how the sex changes as the relationship mm-hmm. changes. Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you mentioned that because I meant to mention that and I forgot. All right. We just have so much to say about all these wonderful, sexy, sexy movies. Tell us what movies you think have great sex scenes. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Christina Tucker, Ronald Young Jr., Aisha Harris, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by Hafsa Fathima and Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy. Hello, Come In provides our theme music. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor MassMutual. The Financial Educators Council says 39% of Americans don't have someone to go to for financial advice, but you can plan for the short and long term with someone backed by 170 years of financial expertise at MassMutual.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor State Farm. In the market for small business insurance, State Farm knows your business is your life. State Farm agents are small business owners, too, so they know what it takes. They can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Small business insurance from State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
These days, news comes at you fast. But the truth? Getting there takes time.
There's something that hasn't been disclosed yet.
Embedded is a podcast that takes the time to look beyond the headlines.
How did this happen? How did we get here?
With original documentary storytelling. Listen to NPR's Embedded wherever you get your podcasts.